Welcome, friends, to The Third Foot, your monthly extra limb of Worst Foot Forward. It's only just occurred to me that before our great realignment to only releasing fortnightly episodes, we used to do four episodes a month plus this extra bonus episode, thus making The Third Foot actually our fifth limb. But now that we're releasing episodes fortnightly, our Third Foot episode actually is our third limb. So I'm glad that us doing less work has actually meant that the titles of our show match up with what they should be.
Accuracy has always been our watchword.
Always, always. Precision has always been our watchword, as well as accuracy.
Accuracy or precision, either accuracy or precision.
Yeah, just whatever you want to go with. Which precision has been our watchword, but spelt A-C-C-U-R-A-C-Y. And that voice you can hear tolerating me once more is my co-host and fellow conspirator in Schadenfreude, Barry McStay.
Glad midsummer to you, Benjamin.
A very glad midsummer to you, Barrington. As you may have gathered from the title, the picture, and the release date of this episode, we are celebrating the solstice, midsummer, and all things equinoxial today. I thought that since we had not covered this yet, and there'll be quite a lot of themes that we'll talk about today that we've talked about in other episodes, it was a good idea to talk about the most important day in the calendar for pagans, neo-pagans, a lot of Scandis and fans of daylight. I also wanted to talk about it because Midsommar is one of my favourite films of the past 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine you've seen it.
No, absolutely not. I don't want to watch films that make me scared.
It made me scared, it weirded me out, it occasionally turned me on, it made me laugh more than I expected, and then it terrified me again.
It's not... Ah, Scandinavia.
Yeah. And that is very much also an applicable review of the latest ABBA hologram show. There are certain films that have just stayed with me. They're not always my favourite. They're certainly not always flawless. But Midsommar is, to quote what the children of 5 years ago were saying, it lives in my head rent-free.
No one lives anywhere rent-free these days.
That's a very good point. But I will say that my subconscious is a very kind landlord and he rolls the bills in along with the rent. Yeah.
So last month we looked at the month of May in general, and obviously we're continuing our romp through the summer traditions with a closer look at midsummer.
Yeah, so today we're just doing a day. So next month we're just going to do July the 17th from 4:04 p.m. to 5:05 p.m. And then in August we're just going to look at one particular nanosecond.
Yeah.
And then by September the podcast is just going to go, and then that's it. Obviously, I began in Sweden and I looked at various midsummer traditions, the first of which is the Maypole or Midsummer Stengen. Obviously, it should go without saying, but it won't because I'm about to say it. Apologies in advance for my ramshackle mispronunciation. Hey Barry, the Midsummer Stengen is a tall pole with two large hoops at the top covered in vines and boskage. What do you think it's a symbol of?
Is it penises?
It's penises, Barry. It's big green penises.
Oh, my favourite type of penis.
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Barry likes zombie penises. Oh my gosh.
They're portable. If they're detachable, then you can bring them with.
Gross. No, I just realised, you know, Barry's been doing a lot of writing recently and he tells me it's a play, but really what I think it is Jolly Green Giant fanfic. Ho, ho, ho.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I can't believe the Jolly Green Giant stole Santa's catchphrase.
Yeah,
I thought he'd get done for copyright.
Well, it's an intonation difference, isn't it? Because yeah, Santa's like, ho, 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 and the Jolly Green Giant is, ho, ho, ho.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
I guess that's how you get away with lifting entire melodies from songs. So, yeah. Fair enough. Well, that's case closed. You're welcome, Jolly Green Giant. We've got your back.
Yeah, nice.
And Barry indeed has your front by the sound of his enthusiasm. The other thing it represents, because nothing in ritual represents just one thing, it's the axis in Norse mythology that links the underworld, Midgard of Earth, and Asgard of the heavens.
Yeah, the world axis. Is that what they call it? Yeah, the world axis.
Yeah, I should know what the underworld is called. It's something else guard. Untergard?
Fire guard.
Midgard? Right guard.
It's just hell, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, or Niflheim.
Oh, I prefer Niflheim. Because Hela is the name of Thor's sister.
Yes.
As portrayed by Kate Blanchett in the movie Thor Ragnarok and My Wife Every Single Day. There's a fairly famous meme going round of Taika Waititi dressed as Taika Waititi showing Kate Blanchett dressed as the goddess of death and war, something on set. And the meme yes. is always something like me, a creative, showing my ridiculously qualified professional wife some dank memes on the internet on Wednesday at 4 p.m. And I have never related so hard to anything ever.
Is there more documentary evidence for the Maypole, in particularly in Scandinavian summer festivals, being a phallic symbol? Because we did touch on it a bit when we talked about May, and some of the suggestions were literally that it's just a really tall thing for people to gather around as well.
You know humans.
I'm aware of them,
Yeah, broadly speaking, I think we can say if we get an opportunity to erect an enormous penis.
Yeah.
We're going to take that opportunity.
This is true.
I'm amazed that the Nazca lines in South America don't have more penises than they do.
Yeah.
I don't know how many penises they do have, but...
I'm going to ask Google some very interesting questions. How many penises are in the Nazca lines? There's not an immediate answer.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we've got to watch out. Otherwise, you'll just get a bunch of dick pics from American racing drivers if you...
not NASCAR penises, yes. Google is going, did you mean...
Yeah.
Okay, do you know what? I don't have time to go Google image searching every one of the NASCAR line depictions. If anyone out there wants to go and see if any of them depict penises, I know there's quite a lot of animals and things in them, so if a listener with more time in their hands than us at the moment wants to do that research, obviously we'd be most grateful. Given my predilection for giant porn, this is just expanding my collection.
Yeah, this is sort of taking the notion of a porno mag hidden in a bush on the way home from school to a whole new level. Like, when Barry goes off on a sexy holiday, he'll be hiring a light aircraft and heading for South America.
Yeah.
Talking of green things, do you know what animal it is traditional to sing about in Sweden on Midsummer?
Green thing? Snake, tortoise... Lizard of some sort. Frog.
There we are. As they walk around the Maypole, Swedes imitate frogs by hopping around it while singing the classic tune, Smaragdorna, the Small Frogs. Just to give you some of the lyrics. The small frogs are funny to look at. No tails, no tails, they have no tails. No ears, no ears, they have no ears.
God, and we thought the frog chorus was the worst song ever written about frogs.
Now listen.
No. I realise it was his 80th birthday a day or two ago, and I now know as well I should never have even tangentially mentioned McCarthy. Get back on target right away. Stay on target, Van de Velde.
All I will say is that whilst the rest of the country was celebrating the bullshit Jubilee a couple of weeks ago, I've been enjoying the real Jubilee.
The Bullfrog Jubilee.
the McCartney Jubilee. And whilst it was not a large part of my childhood, the criticism he's got for the frog chorus is unwarranted because it's a goddamn children's song.
Exactly.
And children like it.
I'm there with you. I'm just being facetious.
Also, if anyone would like a deep dive, head to Patreon later where I'll be talking about amphibians in any and all of Paul McCartney's works. The melody of the Small Frog song actually is taken from the refrain of a military march from the French Revolution. This song, I'm staggered, exists, but it is because the song is called La Chanson de l'Oignon. The Onion Song. So for all of my life, I have seen association of French people with onions as being just nibbling the edge of xenophobia, but it turns out like they've got a whole big song about it. So, and the way it came from is that the enemies of the French at the time of the revolution, the British, changed the text of the Onion song from Opa, Opa, Comrade, In Step Comrades, to Opa, Grenouille, In Step Little Frogs. So basically, the English made it more xenophobic.
Right.
And the Chanson de l'Oignon comes from, well, according to legend, it originated amongst the Old Guard Grenadiers of Napoleon's Imperial Guard. It's a post-revolution song. It's sort of, I imagine it's... The song was a tadpole during the revolution, and it grew legs under Napoleon. So apparently, before the Battle of Marengo, Napoleon found some grenadiers rubbing onion on their bread, and he said, "Very good, there is nothing better than an onion for marching on the road to glory."
And that ended up in Sweden?
That somehow ended up in Sweden. They stole the melody of it, so clearly it was a popular melody.
Yes.
And there's another verse about pigs that I'm only highlighting because of the Swedish for oink is quite fun. The Swedish for croak or ribbit is croak. The Swedish for oink is nerf. So I just have a lyric in front of me that says, nerf, 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 nerf. And nerf, nerf, nerf. And nerf, 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 nerf.
Nerf is like an online term, isn't it? Or a gaming term as well. If something is like, if a character is considered overpowered in a game, that sometimes game developers will update it to, inverted commas, nerf them a little bit to bring them back down to.
There is no way that is related to the Swedish for oink.
That is someone, that if a character has been considered a bit OP and the developers... they've decided to frog them. No, they've decided to pig them, according to you.
Yeah, oh yeah, gotta pig them down.
Yeah.
There is a Swedish tradition that you have strawberries on Midsummer. You know, it's a tradition we have over here. Swedish strawberries tend to be very, very small, but very, very sweet. In the days and weeks running up to Midsummer, Swedish news bulletins are full of press coverage about the strawberry harvest, which is just... very enjoyably parochial, because they're just so proud of it.
Strawberry Watch.
Strawberry Watch, yes. With Agnetha. Ignore that.
With John Craven.
Yeah. We have Scandi listeners, Barry.
I know we do. I'm so sorry.
And there is, across Scandinavia and the Baltic, there are a lot of very similar traditions relating to bonfires and dancing, and thanks to the Romantic movement, a lot of wearing of traditional folkloric dress, which a lot of people nowadays have gone, you're romanticising peasants, aren't you? Because this is what people wore a long time ago, but it was shabby and muddy and frayed, and they haven't worn it for 150 years since industrialisation came along. So stop it, you bourgeois hippies, which is always a fun, I like yelling at festivals. Just a couple of little examples of things that are done on Midsummer in different Baltic states. In Estonia, which is one of the last bastions of paganism in Europe, there was a chap called Balthazar Rossau who wrote in his Livonian Chronicle in 1578 that Estonians, rather than going to church, they spent their time lighting bonfires, drinking, dancing, singing, and following pagan rituals. You know, he was furious that they wouldn't go to church. And eventually, as always happens, the church banned all of the rituals.
Only our rituals, the non-fun ones.
The non-fun ones that definitely aren't based on paganism.
Yeah.
Also in Latvia, this is in a particular town on St. Yanis's Day, because Midsummer is also St. John's Day. So it's St. Yanis, St. Ivan, St. Giovanni, depending on whether you have an exciting language or not. In the western town of Kuldīga, revelers mark the holiday by running naked through the town at 3 o'clock in the morning. I can tell you, Barry, that this has a long-standing noble heritage of 22 years. So it is.
That's very, very recent, given that that's been the tradition in Newcastle for centuries on a Saturday night.
How dare you? We don't run, we stagger.
So that was set up for the millennium, was it?
Pretty much. Right. Pretty much. Big fan of what they do in Porto and Braga in Portugal, where, again, one of the biggest street festivals there. And their bonfires are remarkable. Generally speaking, in the Scandi countries, it's just big sort of stacks of what look like crates or wickerwork. But Porto and Braga is one of those places where they make big, elaborate effigies and then set fire to them after a procession. Mm. But also, it's traditional to plant a flowering leek, or known as an alhoporo, which has a pungent smell, and then on midsummer, harvest it and run it over the face of other people as you go through the street. And also, again, an ancient tradition going back to 1963, to carry a small plastic hammer and use it to bang their neighbours over the head. And apparently, this is a tradition based on the fact that St. John was apparently a bit of a scallywag in his youth, and people had to hit him on the head with some garlic, saying he had to return to the right path.
Okay, so the leek thing kind of makes sense in light of that, but someone has gone, oh, the leek is too cute and dainty, let's have a hammer.
Yeah.
That's Portugal under its military dictatorship at that point, isn't it? just a little bit of a friendly reminder, we're still here.
Yeah, don't get too laid back in liberal Portugal.
Yeah.
Obviously, on the continent, the celebrations are far more exciting and exotic. There are some interesting local variations in England, but the thing that I most enjoyed was the coining of the word bonfire, which there's some writing from the 13th century about some midsummer celebrations in Barnwell in the Nene Valley. And a monk there wrote that in worship of St. John, men waken at even and maken three manner of fires. One is clean bones and no wood, and is called a bonfire. Another is clean wood and no bones, which is called a wake fire, for men sitteth and wake by it. And the third is made of bones and wood, and is called St. John's fire. And of course, there is a fire that is made out of small red velvet creatures called St. Elmo's fire.
But... I could see that coming about 20 seconds ago, and I still really enjoyed it when it arrived.
You're very welcome. What's lovely about this, you know, since we're a podcast about making mistakes and getting things wrong, so bonfire, etymologically, is a shortening of bonfire.
Yes.
Do you think that is what Samuel Johnson, compiler of the dictionary, thought?
Oh, no, probably not. He thought it was a French word based on the burning of sweets or something.
No, literally, he thought bonfire just meant good fire. So old Dr. Johnson would be there on November the 5th going, good fire, good fire. Who's a good fire? Who's a good furnace?
The more I hear about this Dr. Johnson guy, the more I'm convinced he's a fucking idiot. Fraud. Where was his doctorate from? The same place that Colonel Sanders got his military rank.
The other reason, of course, for St. John's fire, explained this this monk, was that it drove away dragons, which would be abroad on St. John's Eve. By abroad, for anyone who's not doesn't have English as their first language, actually meant here rather than abroad, which means there. Rather than eating people, the dragons would mostly be poisoning springs and wells.
Oh, that's a bit of a departure for dragons.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe they want to play the long game. Either that, or do you know what it is? The dragons are thinking, do you know what? I'd bloody love to be in a Miss Marple mystery. The last little thing I want to tell you about in England is the tradition of the Chester procession, first recorded in 1195, and which set out on Midsummer's Eve. I want to tell you about a recording of it from 1564, where the parade included four giants, one unicorn, one dromedary, one luce, don't know what that is, one camel, one dragon, six hobby horses, and 16 naked boys.
Oh, hello. okay.
Because that is how you celebrate Midsummer in Chester. It's basically, it was a very early episode of Hollyoaks.
Midsummer is kind of basically whatever you fancy, isn't it, in terms of these parades.
Alongside this document about this parade, there's also the annual accounts for the parish, which talks about who got paid what for making some of the display. So Buckram was paid 4 shillings for the giant's hood, fine Buckram for the Giant's Whiskers, 10 shillings and 10 pence. Michael Lynch for cutting the Garnish Whiskers and all the roses got 10 shillings. John Wright didn't get paid. Instead, he got 35 days in prison for chiding and brawling and hindering the workmen from their work. Also, for fuddling and drinking with several other letters and molestationers. Just nothing and worthily, he declared. 0 shillings, 0 pence.
If he's just on this list, presumably he was one of the team, and then he's the one who's trying to distract everyone from doing any work by the sound of it.
I think so.
It's like, oh, lads, pints. It's like, John, it's like 10:30 in the morning. Yeah, but pints, though.
Yeah, it's midsummer's. Come on, we got all day. Longest day of the year. Cider. Come on, lads.
Yeah, it's like it's a holiday. Yeah, but we're doing the preparation for the holiday. Yeah, but it's a holiday.
You have never sounded more Irish. Another tradition, this is in various countries, was the fern was quite a magical flower. And if you picked a fern and placed it on a hidden away, then it might somehow predict who you would marry in the future. My favourite one is an old French sorcery recipe for a lucky bracelet, which included a fern picked on Midsummer's Eve. Other parts of the bracelet included vulture blood, an eel that died from lack of water, and a hanged man's rope. Now available at Claire's Accessories for $14.99. 3 other things about a rather famous play. Can you tell me in which Shakespeare plays you will find the word Midsummer?
Oh, this feels like a trap, doesn't it? As You Like It.
Very good.
Because that's out in the forest. Mm-hmm. I'm going to avoid saying one that, I mean, it's in the title. Midsummer Night's Dream, it's literally in the title.
It's literally in the title and nowhere else.
That's not anywhere else. No, it won't be in Twelfth Night. Is that it?
It is in Twelfth Night.
Oh, is it? Oh, great.
Yeah. And also
all the party ones.
Part one. Yeah, all the party ones. And Henry the Fourth Part One is a party one, isn't it? Because it's got Falstaff in it.
Falstaff, yeah.
All the party ones, very good. 2 other facts about the play before my final wee story are in April 1964, who played the Rude Mechanicals in a special ITV broadcast of Midsummer Night's Dream?
No, it wasn't the Beatles, was it? The Beatles were so good. So that's Bottom and Peter Quince and all of those people.
Yeah, so McCartney was Pyramus, John Lennon was Thisbe, George Harrison was Moonshine, and I think Ringo was The Wall.
Of course
he was.
Pink Floyd was The Wall, I think.
Unbelievable. Yeah, just Sid Barrett turning up. and then he nibbled on some of the ivy and moonshine and it all fell to bits. And last of all on that, what is, in Midsummer Night's Dream, a huge clanging anachronism that if it were a Hollywood movie, would have huge BuzzFeed articles about it pointing out Shakespeare's mistakes?
Oh, now I've talked about anachronisms in Shakespeare, I think, on the podcast in the past.
Yeah, I think you might have even mentioned this one on the pod.
There's a chiming clock, but I think that's Julius Caesar.
Correct. So it is gunpowder. So in Act 3, Scene 2... Puck tells the fairy king, Oberon, how when Bottom's friends see him with a donkey's head, they act like wild geese, rising and cawing at the gun's report. Now, gunpowder was invented in China around 850. The play was written in the early 17th century. In fact, no, excuse me, in the late 16th, wasn't it? It was 1590s for Midsummer Night's Dream. Mm-hmm. But of course, the play is notionally set, classically, in Athens, in ancient Athens. Shakespeare's having his cake and eating it with that one.
Yes. Of course, cake wasn't invented until...
until 1791 by Marie Antoinette. by zombie Marie Antoinette. By 1780 by Marie Antoinette.
No, you're right. She wasn't executed in 1793.
Fine.
I'll cut it at the bit at which you were funny. And correct.
Yeah. And last of all, I found a cracker of a story. So I looked at sort of the history of bonfires and saw if there was any peculiar bonfires I could find. And I discovered a very strange RAF tradition. And it is a tradition of piano burning. And this is carried out by the British Air Force, Canadian and United States. The traditions of it may well be apocryphal, but let me tell you the story because it's great. So there's a book called The Phantom in Focus, A Navigator's Eye on Britain's Cold War Warrior by a chap called David Gledhill. And he recounts training exercises in Germany during the Cold War where pilots of Jaguar aircraft had the task of destroying a piano placed on Nordhorn Ridge with a single practice bomb. And because it was so small, it was only the final pilot on the final exercise that managed to hit it. And they celebrated later that evening at RAF Wildenrath by burning a second piano in the officer's mess.
What? Why?
I don't know.
That's like a Goon Show sketch.
The great piano burner of RAF Wildenrath. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's just mad. Pianos are fucking expensive.
Yeah. There is an alternative story, maybe apocryphal. So between World War One and Two, because there was such a high death toll for pilots in World War One, the RAF became less full of toffs. They had to let the common folk ply a bit more just to make up the numbers. And because Britain was an even more class-driven society than it is now, if you can possibly imagine it, in order to make them the best pilots that they could be, the RAF educated them as well in manners and tastes. But and these included piano lessons. But apparently the lessons were so unpopular among pilots that in order to get out of them, beginning at RAF Lucas, pianos would be burnt down at the bases in order to get their piano lessons cancelled.
That's extreme.
That is
also
extreme, isn't it?
I love the idea that these people are being like ordered to go into combat, but tell them to take a fucking piano lesson and that's where they draw the line.
Mm-hmm. What the one last suggestion, which is quite touching, is that according to the New Zealand Herald, there was a piano playing pilot in the RAF during World War II, and he'd play to his fellow airmen each time one of his colleagues had been killed. And so when he was killed, his comrades decided that if he couldn't play the piano anymore, nobody would. And so they dragged it outside and set it alight in his honour. And nowadays, it's beautiful, isn't it? There are piano burning ceremonies based on the RAF tradition. A piano was burnt at Langley Air Force Base in 2011 to celebrate the 94th anniversary of the 94th Fighter Squadron. At Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, they burn a piano each year in commemoration of the Battle of Britain. And my favourite one is that in a base near Wisconsin, there has been an annual piano burning ceremony since 2004 to mark the summer solstice.
Oh, nice.
And before it is burnt, someone delivers a eulogy for the piano.
So these pianos they're burning, are they wooden ones?
Yeah, it's upright pianos.
Upright piano. I mean, you can get a used upright piano for £100 on eBay. I've just had a little look.
And if you donate to our Patreon, friends, then me and Barry will don our fire-retardant uniforms and play a piano whilst it's on fire.
Depending on how many people donate, we'll go for the £100 on eBay, or we could get the... or we could get a Steinway for 86 grand.
Do we look like the KLF?
We'll have fully, finally ascended.
Yes, we will. So that is your wee journey through Midsummer, from giant green phalluses to aflame Steinways.
And everything in between. Thanks as ever to our supporters on Patreon for the donations, which help keep the lights on and help us do these episodes. If you want to join them, check out patreon.com/worstfootforward, where you can donate, find out all the different rewards that are on offer, and so on. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a regular episode. In the meantime, I'm about to go run around a giant green phallus, but Ben's going to go celebrate Midsummer, I believe. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Barry's gonna have a very glad midsummer.